This research comes, my presentation comes from the research study I am currently doing in Houston, Texas. Even though I'm at Arizona State University, I'm a public community health nurse, and this area is my community. So this is where I've worked and where I've also set up collaborations with and the grassroots networks I've made. So this reflects the team. You can see I've got other professionals on my team, and I have three community health workers on my team. And promotoras is the Spanish word for promoter, health promoter. And so they're pretty much equivalent to a community health worker. And I will probably go into a little bit more about the similarities and maybe the differences. I have no financial interests to disclose. Okay. My project is about the primary prevention of childhood obesity. For this project, we are enrolling pregnant women in their last trimester from a WIC clinic, and the City of Houston Health Department is one of my community partners. And at the WIC clinic, the promotoras will talk to the women and figure out who fits our protocol and enroll them if they're interested in having home visits made to help prevent obesity. And it's a randomized controlled trial, so some get enrolled and get the home visits for the intervention, some get the just the regular WIC care, and they all get measurement visits by a promotora who's blinded to groups. But if you're looking at primary prevention of childhood obesity, you need to think about having babies start off at the normal weight. And so that means we hope to prevent the babies who are born greater than 9 pounds. They should be appropriately fed during the first year, and breastfeeding has been shown. They can't do randomized controlled trials with breastfeeding, but the best evidence shows that breastfeeding has a protective effect against obesity. Another way to prevent obesity is avoidance of early solids. Really, 4 months is basically the very earliest, and then 6 months is what's recommended by American Academy of Pediatrics. And no foods of low nutritional quality. That means junk food, you know, the chips, the sodas, the cookies, things like that. Then secondary prevention would be early recognition of overweight and trying to address it right away and appropriately feeding the children who are becoming overweight and increasing physical activity. And so this project is constructed to focus on public health level interventions, you know, primary, secondary, and we hope we don't get to any tertiary obese kids. So, like I said, I work with the WIC clinic, primarily one WIC clinic that's in the east side of Houston, which is the old area that's traditionally been the Mexican-American area. It's along the ship channel, the Houston ship channel, where there's lots of petrochemical plants. So there is also a lot of pollution going on, and there, it's a fairly rundown area, I would say. A lot of immigrants come in there, you know, when they're migrating from Mexico, that's like their first stop. And this research project was developed through community-based participatory research with the WIC staff, with the nursing staff at the City of Houston Health Department, and with the community partners. And there is a grassroots network that started off as De Madres a Madres, Mothers to Mothers, and I also work with the Sisters of Charity, who have donated office space for us in this neighborhood for $1 a year. And so we work closely with those agencies. And the intervention is delivered through home visits from the promotoras. They go out and make home visits and talk to the moms, and we have a set protocol that they have to follow. Okay. The intervention content, it's really based on the Institute of Medicine, and it says exclusive breastfeeding until 6 months and then continuing until 12 months. By exclusive, that means no bottles, no formula introduced, that breast milk only. I heard an interesting comment the other day. Someone said, well, doesn't exclusive mean you only feed your baby and not other babies? I said, no, exclusive means you don't supply formula. This is probably one of the biggest challenges that we have. Also, appropriate portions and choices for infant feeding. You know, how much can a baby actually eat? How much should a baby actually eat? What is good baby food for them to eat? We do parenting education for behavior management. What do you do when your toddler throws a fit because they want candy? These children are followed up to the age of 3. So this intervention is from birth to 3. how to do sleep promotion, because sleep has a heavy, or it's been shown to have a strong link with obesity development, less sleep and more obesity. Physical activity is appropriate for age, how can moms and babies be active together, and then try to limit the screen time. Get the babies, get the children away from the screens. And so the promotoras, or community health workers, I see them as a liaison who provide cultural mediation between health care and social services. That is their traditional role, and Texas has a well-formulated community health worker examination and training, and it's very rigid. It takes about 4 months of training to become a community health worker, and then they're certified. And the training primarily is on how to help the community residents access services, how to get them referred in. And so promotoras are trained to help people get things, help people get services. And so the reason I'm doing this presentation is that having them do research, especially in a randomized controlled trial, where some people get services and others you don't do the home visits to these people because they're in the control group and you can't tell them everything that you want to. And so it did create some tension with the promotoras, and so we've had to work through that. So that's why I wanted just to share this with you. Generally, a promotora is a trusted community member, who knows the community, knows the resources in the community, knows the language, the culture, the SES, is really from that community. And they really do assist people to gain access to services, and they build really community and system capacity. And oftentimes they're the ones in the community that other people will turn to and ask for help. So primarily this has been their official, and this is what they're educated and trained to do, outreach, go out and find people and refer them into clinic, do a lot of patient navigation, help them get through different systems, especially if it's a complicated, like a breast cancer patient. Well, how should they, get all these different appointments made and get their treatment? What kind of education should be done? Lots of community health education, lots of informal counseling, social support, advocacy. Participation in clinical research is one of the newer areas. And I know I have been asked by one of the community health worker trainers to think about adding this to their community health worker official training. And that's something I think I would like to do, because I think this is a fertile area when we're doing public health research to think about using all levels of expertise. So when we think about their roles in research, what I've set up, and this is really what I've come up with, is that they're the ones that tell the subjects about the research. So of course they have to go through their city, the Collaborative Institute for Training Initiative, which is the human subjects online test they have to take. That usually takes several days for them to understand the human subjects protocols and, go through all the exams and take the tests and pass it, because until they pass it, they can't be on their IRB, they can't be part of the study, they can't recruit subjects, because I want them to recruit subjects. And then they have to retain subjects, they have to be sure that they keep in close contact with people. Of course, they have to provide informed consent, and as you all know, informed consent is more than just signature. Informed consent means telling them everything they need to know about a study, all the risks and benefits, and what it entails. And with advanced training, they can aid in the intervention, but that does take advanced training. So these are the kind of things that they have to have core competencies in: communication, interpersonal skills, service coordination, capacity building, advocacy, teaching, organizational structure, and a knowledge base in the specific health area that they're working on, especially if they're doing research. And there is a new competency-based examination. I know I recently read a paper about this competency-based approach was tested at a community health worker convention, and they asked the community health workers which of these did they think was important, and they were able to, through factor analysis come down to that these are the core competency areas, and there's probably going to be a certification developed, like a nationwide certification exam for community health workers next. So these are the kind of things that I had to teach them in my project. Basically, the first thing was to go through human subjects training, so that, took several days in training. And then a basic study design, research design. You know, what are the different kinds of designs? If it's a descriptive study, which maybe some of them had done before, they were used to getting everybody and getting information from everybody. But if it's a controlled trial, then they have to understand randomization and blinding and know you cannot discuss this, you know, this case in front of this promotor because she's the one who makes the measurement visits and she's supposed to be blind to which is which. And so we had to go through all that. Then the whole intervention versus control area, a systematic data collection, collecting the same data on every subject, every time, at the right time. You know, just like we deliver medications, you know, we have our five rights. So we'll have the same thing. I had to train them with data collection. And then what's clinical data versus research data? What do you need to know on each visit just to give, you know, the nurse and the physician feedback on about a potential issue versus what do you gather and collect and we put in our research study? And then intervention and fidelity and control and rigor. In other words, don't go off topic. Don't say, well, you know, I read this article, you know, in the paper, and it says, well, you can do this for your baby. And it's like, no, you've got to stick with what we say you should tell them. So we had to teach them anthropometrics and how to measure and record, and that was a challenge because, you know, I'm expecting the promotors to do all of this on home visits, so they have to carry a scale and a length board on their home visits, and generally we do it on the floor because there's no tables that are big enough for this, and for some of them it was physically challenging to walk up two flights of stairs, you know, scale and length board on stairs that aren't that aren't that secure, and then get up and down off the floor and, you know, measure the kids. And then, probably one of the biggest challenges, I have a picture of a growth grid, was understanding how to graph weight for length, BMI percentiles, because that requires some mathematical computing, especially when they do it with, you know, say that they're getting weight in ounces, you know, pounds and ounces, and they have to convert it into, you know, metric measurement. We did a lot of work with that. And then establishment of an interpersonal working relationships. There were issues among the team members about who was going to do what, and so that we had to work through that. And then a critical thinking skill. You know, the mother says, my baby's been vomiting and had diarrhea for the last 3 days, so do you think that's something I should do something about, you know? And it's like, yeah, you need to let us know right away, you know, this is an issue that we need to address, you know. Or when one of the subjects says, how much kaopectate do you give a baby when they've got diarrhea? Well, you don't do any, you know, you have them go to the physician, and so some of these kind of things. So this is the growth grid. This is probably one of the biggest challenges we've had, is getting accurate weights and measures and getting them graphed, because we have to track it. We have to be sure, because we're focused on primary prevention, but we do have babies that are gaining weight and getting too heavy, and so we have to do secondary prevention. So they have to be able to differentiate. Is this still in primary prevention? Are these babies in the right growth channel, or are they edging up across growth channels to where we need to say these babies need a special targeted intervention? So we've gotten that established, and now we're doing extra follow-up on those babies once they pass the 85th percentile weight for length. But just getting that concept in, you know, you get the weight and the length, but you put them together and you do weight for length, and then you graph it and you follow the channel and see how those change. So all of that was kind of complex. So this is another area that they had to learn when they're making home visits, because WIC clinics can, you know, recruit from a fairly large area of town. They had to get comfortable in the communities that are beyond their own. They had to be willing to drive into neighborhoods that probably they hadn't been at before, you know, just having to find people. This is always a challenge. Dealing with numerous varied domestic situations, you know, people move from place to place, especially when they're new immigrants. Also, when there's issues like domestic violence, issues of people moving, you know, like sometimes there's 20 people in the room, sometimes, you know, in the one or two room apartment, sometimes there's 10. They bring in other family members. You know, it's a very fluid situation. They have to be able to go off script when delivering information. I know I've stressed about intervention fidelity, but it's also important to think about, they have to be able to address user critical thinking and know when to address an emergent problem. So we've had to work on that. and how to pace the visit so they're productive, so that they get through the whole protocol, but they don't spend 2 hours there doing it. And so why would you want to do promotoras if I've laid out all of these issues you have to think about? Well, they know the language and the culture. You know, even though as public health nurses, we really do try to understand our population's language and culture, we can't actually be in it unless we grew up in that area. And so having promotoras to be our links is very, very valuable. It's also important to have a non-professional view of translating clinical knowledge to participant level, because lots of times they said, I don't understand this. There's no way the participant's going to understand this, you know, so help us think through how to say it better. And then we hope it's going to be a sustainable program when the research is complete. You know, that's my hope, that there will be people in the community who know how to help mothers. In fact, the promotoras have told me, you know, I am thinking differently about, you know, when I see children that are kind of chunky now. I want to go up and talk to that mom about what to do. They said, we are learning so much. And it increases their knowledge and their employability. Because let's face it, grant funding, soft money, you know, things move on, and they have to be able to move on too. And so if they have all of these research skills, it makes them more valuable. And so I was going to say, what's working? Strong relationships, the community, the participants, and their families. We have a really good retention rate. We are collecting so much data, you wouldn't believe it. We're just like, where do we start, you know, analyzing all of this? We do close follow-up through weekly phone calls, you know, hello, where are you, and how are you doing, and when's your next visit, and things like that. I have separated data collection from intervention delivery, so the data collection is done by one promotor. That's all she does is just go out and collect our data. And so the intervention promotors can focus on delivering the intervention, plus they supposedly don't know whose intervention, whose control. So this is one of the issues that's not working. We didn't really establish close relationships with the delivery hospitals and the primary care pediatricians. So the delivery hospital that's most often used in Houston is the county teaching hospital. So we have a C-section rate of 48%. Yeah, and I know that it's not a baby-friendly hospital because, you know, everybody's coming home with formula in their hand, and when you've got a breastfeeding promotion and they come home already on formula, it's, you know, this is a difficult. Initially there were poor interprofessional team relationships. The community health workers were used to being individuals, having their area, their focus, and to have to work as a team and collaborate on cases, because I really expect them to be able to share cases like, you know, we all have had to do. That was difficult for them. Long-distance communication issues. I'm the PI. I'm in Arizona. You know, something happens in Texas. I've set up local people for them to work with very closely, though. And then the lack of knowledge about behavioral change interventions. You know, how do you do behavioral change? You know, how do you establish that working relationship? How do you, you know, do the motivational interviewing? That's something I don't think we as professionals realize how valuable it is that we've acquired. And lots of times non-professionals don't have that. So just tips of the future. Give yourself, if you plan to do this, I wish I'd given myself a longer lead time in training. I thought I could hire them, train them in a week or two, and boom, start the research. It took 2 or 3 months to do the training. It really took a lot longer than I thought. I need to focus more on team building initially. I thought I'd hire them. You know, they're all promotors. They know how to work together. Boom, and they don't. We have to do team building initially. A constant emphasis on critical thinking. You know, they bring a problem up on this. Instead of just solving it, you know, like I want to, I turn it back to them. Well, how do you think we should do this? You know, let's work through this together. And then there really needs to be a professional on site for necessary supervision of research. And so I have a co-investigator at UT Houston School of Nursing. She was actually my doctoral student, and now she's an assistant professor there, and she's doing very well, and she works with those, you know, she's there weekly, she's available by text, by phone call, whatever, you know, to supervise. So combining community action and research is difficult for community health workers, but yes, it can be done. And if you do it, be sure there's clear communication channels so everybody knows their role and who to talk to and when to talk to them. But the community perspective is invaluable. I think this is the way research in community health really needs to be done. I think CBPR is best done this way when the community is truly involved. So my thank you, you know, City of Houston, Texas Department of Health, Community Action Board, Promotores, our research partners, and then, of course, my funder. I always want to acknowledge, have to acknowledge NIH. Okay, I'll get questions at the end. Thank you.